Maria, thank you for coming in. You just have a wonderful background, many years in startups and fundraising, investor relations, and you're a serial entrepreneur, advisor, environment, so you're into philanthropy. And now you've got this Earth 05, which is just an amazing sort of water, energy, food security kind of nexus, age of AI, confluence. And we want to mine all of that. So thank you for coming in and sharing so many of your experiences with our audience.
Thank you, Stefan, for having me. It's a great pleasure to have another conversation with you, and I look forward to the conversation.
So Maria, you got this marvelous history of accomplishment and contribution and global impact. And what were the, three inflection points in your life? And it could have been something when you were 3 years old or five, inside or outside the family. Could have been in school, outside the school, maybe some job points, mentors, and so on that made this really remarkable, stunning career and personal and professional life that you have today.
Yeah, that's a good question. I thought about it the other day. What would that be to made who I am today and the way I think and have, everything from work to a personal life? And it came to my conclusion mainly that our parents really leaves a very important footprint at a young age. And it's really so important the way we're raised and at a certain time of our lives. And for me, for example, I mentioned a bit earlier that I had quite an interesting, I would say, childhood, which have remained I would say set the footprint in who I am and the way I think and the way I act as a contributor in on Earth. And if I would want to recall back to the first memory that I have that has been helped by my family to recall it, but it's the part that I was born in Beirut. I was born in Lebanon. And forgive me if my thought process right now, because I'm recalling at the same time some actions. And I've had multiple of those different pivotal moments at a young age. I've been traumatized in different aspects of childhood that I've experienced that like everyone else was experiencing right now in Ukraine or in Palestine or in Israel. And my heartfelt goes to all of the childrens there, because I've been once a child just like everybody who's right now experiencing this challenges. And to zoom back to your question is that at the age of seven, I just had a story from my parents the other day, literally a few days ago. My dad used to be a veteran and a warrior, and he used to fight in those battles on the ground at start before he made up his career in military. And from what I learned, that they had to let me go for a full year away from my family and from my parents, because my dad was in the war on the ground and my mom was on the ground, hidden with her parents and my young baby brother that she couldn't let go at 3 years old. And at the age of seven, they left me at a nun house to continue my school, not to lose my school year. And the only way I was communicating with my parents, it was through radio at the time. It's not really like what it is today with this amazing transformation of digital era. So I would say this is one of the first that have left a footprint in me of who I am and created this empathy that I have, an extreme empathy for children and extreme empathy for people in suffering, and what led me to do what I'm doing as well on Earth 05 today. It's definitely a part of that people call it trauma, but I think it is, yeah, kind of a trauma in a way. So that's one of the things that I can think of now. If you go back a bit more from my childhood, which I recall very little events, but that's one of those that I think have left a big footprint on me.
And were there others as you got older, maybe in school, post-secondary school and university or college, or maybe some of your first jobs that were inflection points as well?
I would say, Stefan, afterwards, there's another really big that I can't forget is that age of 11 because I did have lots of reflection a few, literally not a long time ago. That's why I still have the numbers of my head that I had to confirm with my parents. At the time, I recall An image of a young child with big brown eyes and suffering, an African child. And it was all these advertisement on TV at the time. It was quite, all the time watching cartoons and during the holiday season. And then you see all these advertisement of young children featured by UNICEF and the pain they're suffering, no access to water, no access to food. And I would say this image has been chasing me for most of my life, but I didn't know what to do with it. And I felt really helpless at the time, Stefan. Like I felt helpless to the point I wanted to help that child, but I can't. And that image kept on going on advertisements, and it's just there all the time, especially on holiday seasons. I'm not sure if you had that in where you were raised, Stefan, at the young age. Have you experienced those UNICEF campaigns that and left any footprint on you as well at some point?
Absolutely, for sure.
Yeah. So I would say that has been one of the major for me as well. If I want to recall back to another incident and felt helpless at the time, but and I made a promise to myself. I think like most of us do, we don't really like to see this kind of experiences, and especially when we see it at a young age. And I made a promise back then that one day I'm gonna do something to help, and that day has showed up last year when I started at 5.
So that's really, really remarkable. I mean, I can see how your challenges when you were very young and that helped shape to who you are today. And as you mentioned, you were in this sort of a place with nuns and kind of shelter and to help protect you. And then seeing the images of young people and the impact of the world on their lives and that helped shaped you. When you were older, did you study technology in school, or were you more into sort of the humanities in school? And that could be high school, or it could be in college or university, that sort of your educational arc. Can you describe some elements of that?
At school, I did go to an amazing school where at the time it's a private school in Beirut. And in my school, we were French educated in the private system, and we had a mix of all cultures, basically. In Lebanon, we have about five different religions. And I had friends from, Islamic friends to Protestant friends to Dersi, etc. And I really liked it a lot. So that form of unity in one place, it's very normal for me. So I think I've learned at that time that even though we have our differences, we can still actually communicate and engage with each other on a human level. That's what kind of footprint left me at school during my school years. Then regarding the tech, I did not study tech. I started my career very, very late. That's another story for another time why so, but I had my reasons, and definitely not financial reasons, for other reasons. And I moved to Barcelona to enroll my bachelor in business, and I have I didn't study the technology, but I've been educated in wealth management, and my master's also in international management. But technology has came through in Barcelona through my I have the ability to have like envision of future possibilities, and that's where kind of my I fell in love with tech at the time. But we're talking about this 20 years ago, not the tech that was accessible, but the tech that was going on in my head, I would say. The things that I was envisioning in my head, which became true a few years 10 years ago.
So that's interesting. I mean, you study business, but you also study the sort of international relations aspect, and I can see that infusing what you're doing. You also have 20 plus years in tech startups, and so I can see on the fundraising investor relationship side, that's your master's is related to that. Can you talk about your journey in tech startups? So how did that first start? And how you progressed in that, and five times serial entrepreneur, and then how that evolved into being an environmentalist and into philanthropy.
Very good one. Basically, I would say I've been an environmentalist and a humanist at heart from start. I just were not was not equipped in a forum that I knew what to do with it at the time up until a few years ago. Now, the tech startup has been a natural evolution of my international background and as well of the education in finance to support technologies or startup founders in their investment readiness journey. And that has been a natural cycle of evolution for me to learn more about technologies, having worked and hosted workshops with multiple tech companies and different backgrounds, everything from AI companies, AI-driven machine learning, smart city specifically, Internet of Things, cybersecurity, and so on. So I had the opportunity to, since my brain doesn't function in one linear way, like I need to have in terms of on the intelligence side, I need to feed my brain with different new activities all the time. Otherwise, I feel I'm that coding in my head. So that has been a natural for me, given the curiosity that I have to learn all about tech. And that's where I was working simultaneously with different technologies at the same time. That's really contributed a lot to what I'm doing today, to have the generic understanding and to be able to see and create the creative solution with what I've finally managed to pull together, the Earth of 5 platform. Which is ultimately the results of the learnings and the failures, obviously, that I have experienced throughout these journeys.
So on the tech side then, you gained expertise in things like water waste management and Internet of Things technologies or IoT, and you've been involved with smart cities projects and deployments in over 300 cities. And in that process, you got experience in advancing water rights, conservation, ethical AI. So all of these sort of very broad aspects have come to play into what you're doing now. And you also designed things into digital twin technologies and immersive technologies, which metaverse, the term metaverse used to be really sort of popular. It's not as popular now, but it's there, right? So
Active.
I can see how all of these things help shape you today. Then what caused you to be the founder and CEO of Earth 5? I mean, what was the motivation for that, and that got you started to Earth 5? And then we'll ask a series of questions about Earth 5.
Sure. The main trigger, I would say, it's been when I've decided. I literally took it came to a point in my career where things became a little bit too repetitive for me. And I start seeing a repetitive pattern in terms of on the investment readiness, on the investor relation. It's always kind of the same kind of day-to-day job, and I'm not really connecting with my true self and with my with I felt that I've had the calling a while ago. And I've been also recalling a lot. Maybe it comes with aging, I don't know. But I've been literally getting a lot of calling to those. Okay, let me put it that way. It's, in fact, the Ukrainian war had triggered me. The Syrian war and Israeli conflict triggered me. And that's the pain that I feel, and again, the feeling of feeling helpless again is just eating me up, because I feel now with my skills, with what I've learned, with my resources, with my network, I don't feel helpless anymore as I did literally over 30 years ago. And it came to the point that I just made a decision. I want to do something about it, and I want to contribute or be, join forces with like-minded who are actually committed to make a difference, not to make a difference changing the world. We cannot change as one, we cannot change in silos, but join collectively forces with like-minded individuals in order to achieve a substantial contribution. And that has been the main trigger that I just, it's a personal frustration of what's going on. I mean, the UN, for example, they're doing everything they can, but without the contribution of the private sector and the tech industry, they cannot necessarily achieve much by themselves. And I've seen their work. I've been observing it for quite some time, and the advertisement that I've seen over 30 something years ago, it's still the same. Like, we're going into droughts, the war conflict. There's so much that's still the same. Like, I don't, especially when it comes to water conservation and water rights. And we still see people suffering. There's still droughts happening. We also see children without access to water. So I literally made that commitment to myself, and I'm determined with my commitment this time that I'm not gonna let myself feel helpless again any single day anymore. I'm gonna do everything in my capacity to make a difference. And by building together this platform and bringing the different stakeholders that can help with this mission, in collaboration without competing with everyone, is quite the opposite. It's actually filling in where the gap is and adding more resources to it and nothing else. And that's how I felt that I can contribute. And I felt with the remaining few years that I have of life, of how many that is, God knows, I want to live with my purpose. As I age, I don't want to age by driven by financial, like finance industry anymore. And I didn't really enjoy it at all, I must say, as a woman in the space. It's been very challenging, and I don't feel I want to go back to that space at all. Unless it's, working with those funds that they're focusing only on the nexus, water, food, and energy. And that's what what's my current status on that? If I answered all your question, if what you expected, Stefan.
So what I'm hearing is that you have this background in tech startups, fundraising, investor relations, serial entrepreneurship, as an environmentalist and philanthropy, and you on the finance side, because you have this background in international relations and finance and so on, you wanted to catalyze that experience in the remaining time you have to work in creating a nonprofit where you want to co-create on this amalgamation, sort of this conjunction of water, energy, and food security, all infused with AI, and you've designed this. You're co-creating this prize and promoting open innovation and an application digital twin technologies and all of this as well. But that was as a precursor to all of the things you're doing. But also, it'll be infused into what you're doing now. So you chose a name called Earth. Is it Earth 05 or Earth 5?
Well, it depends. Well, this is something, if you're free to your native, how you like to pronounce it. It's can be both Earth 05 or Earth 05. Even myself, sometime I say Earth 05 or Earth 05.
And so I'm curious, in the naming, you found that you couldn't get it unique by just going Earth and then no, number five, and that's why you put a zero in the front, or?
Well, it's for a purpose, actually. It's for a personal reminder, I would say. So for me to keep on remembering and reminding myself of the mission and the purpose I'm in, and the name, it serves that, because I wanted to make sure that then everything that I'm doing, it is actually coming from an authentic place and driven by the purpose that I'm aligning the work that I do with my, personal, to keep myself, because this is a nonprofit, to keep myself also remembering that I'm doing it for a reason. And Earth of Five, it's a very dear, like, it's a very close words that I selected. Like, each one of those breakdown of the numbers has a meaning.
So that's really fascinating. You're fostering co-creation with the water, energy, and food security nexus within the age of AI. How do you plan to do that?
That's a very good question. So, as you mentioned earlier, that the prize has been something that I brought with my skills to design, focusing on pioneering open innovation and co-creation. Now, when we say in the age of AI, knowing that everything today moving forward is going to be AI based. I mean, AI is here to stay. And AI is also a part of, it has a dual role. And that dual role, it's up to us how we actually deal with either of the consequences of each of the role that it has. However, if you look from the bright side, the world has never been more ready than what we are today. And I will tell you the reason why we believe at Earth of Five that we can tackle on and solve the water crisis with the help of AI, but not only AI, advanced technologies like Internet of Things and blockchain, for instance, can tackle on the issues with water scarcity, for instance. And if you look into that, why this particular prize has been designed this way and what's the digital twin role in it, it's actually what we're looking at. We're not looking to fight or to tackle on only the 1% to 1.2% of Earth's fresh water, which is accessible to us today. And that is something where most of the work of everybody has been surrounded by. It's this particular fresh water access, basically. But if that's something perhaps that you know, and all of us know that there's 3% of fresh water around Earth, and that's the same amount remaining throughout all the Earth life cycle. And 97% is actually salt water. And the 3 out of 3% today, we only have access to up to 1.2%. So I've done a lot of research myself because I've always been fascinated by water, both on spiritual side and also on my, throughout my life. Water has meant a different meanings for me, and it's part of my mission. So, and then I started looking more in depth of what is going on with the rest of the remaining of the access non-accessible fresh water. And that's actually hasn't been accessible because it's locked down in the glaciers and the underground or up in the glaciers. And the problem is that we didn't have the technologies we have today, like robotics, like Internet of Things, AI, for instance, as well. And up until today, we've never been equipped by these advanced technologies. So having worked as well with smart cities and water wastewater management, I've learned a lot about the process. And then I looked into what can we do to tap on these additional remaining resources so that we can actually, if with 1.2%, we have 2 billion of people, as we all know the statistic. Now it's going to be increasing after the WEF stating about 40% of people won't have access to fresh water in within the next 7 years, which is, it's nothing that we want to believe, I would say, because it doesn't sound good at all. However, our proposal at the prize is let us bring in these technologies together. And when it comes to water, as water is transparent, let us be transparent and unite forces instead of working in silos, because we have a big problem we need to tackle on, and that is the accessibility of fresh water. And the digital twin solution came to the creation of the design prize that I've done is because the only way forward is that we cannot start, for example, based on my experience with smart cities, we used to, start based on the infrastructure pipeline that is actually still in paper, some of them, because most of the municipalities don't have that in digital. It's li literally still like some of the space areas like where we have major issues, like in Africa, for instance, all of those is not even digitalized. So then the point here was to look into how we can digitalize these processes in a short amount of time, but also get the co-created solution through the prize, through open innovation and open sourcing, then look into how we can apply it in a real world application without, with doing the simulation online and then being able to assess the complexity and also the feasibility of the projects ahead of the real world application. So that's what digital twin will serve. It will serve to accelerate the solution, but also it will serve to minimize the risks for the speed to deployment of these co-created solutions. So that's kind of what the
So I can see the application of water, right? Because there's only a small percentage of water that's available, and you want to un unlock that water that's available, and you're creating this prize. Can you talk more about the prize then? Because you're indicating it's promoting open innovation, the application of digital twin technologies in the metaverse. as a precursor to the real world deployment. So on this prize, is it going to be launched next year, or what do you think is the size of that prize? How does energy and food security fit into this prize? What type of applications, what type of innovation you think will be awarded through this prize? Like who in the audience would be interested in this prize and why?
So we're looking for scientists, academics, PhD, startup founders, and every single brilliant mind out there who have a solution or have a vision or have a research that's been done, but they cannot find a home to it in order to collaboratively work on towards the solution. When we're talking about water conservation, water offsetting, and microplastic pollution. So that's what the prize is covering. And to answer your question, the prize is live now, and the application will close by June this year, end of June. And next year, prize will be replicated based on the water prize, which is focused this year. It will be replicated on food and energy. So first, we want to focus only on one vertical, test it that it works, and then see the and then as well see the response, of what comes out of it first ahead of applying it on another vertical. But so far, the main focus why it's on water because of its priority, so and because of the urgency.
And then on the price itself, it's going to close in June.
Yes.
Is there a financial part of the prize or recognition, or what are the benefits of people who are applying for the prize?
One, this is a prize that is focused for entrepreneurs and visionaries and scientists who want to make a change. So it's actually recognition that's number one, and that's priority for us. We want to get all these brilliant minds together to really make a change. That's one. And number two, it's the business development and speed to deployment. We have access to indigenous communities, which we want to also facilitate the support in that. There's many communities where they're struggling with kids getting sick, drinking contaminated water, and since we have the access, we help as well to give them the speed to market. And then, of course, it is monetary price, but we're keeping that as a surprise for the next. It will be launched by closing because for now we want to see those who are really motivated to make a change before we launch the big surprise of how much they'll be gaining as a monetary. That's why we put it as the least priority because we're not driven by the financial, financial motivation. It's actually more of a motivation to really get out there the impact entrepreneurs who are out there to make a change.
Have you collaborated with the Earthshot Prize and some of the other prizes that are out there? Are you talking to those people at all, or?
Not yet, not yet. Would love to actually. I mean, we're all about collaboration. We definitely would love that. But if because our prize, it's pretty much focused on the digital, like the co-creation and open innovation, and it's based on digital twin, like the validation of this co-created new innovation. Because we think that by putting the brilliant minds together, magic can happen. To use the existing resources instead of working in silos. We're more than happy to look into. We looked into the other prizes, but we haven't been in touch with any just yet.
Okay, so what you're doing then is you're trying to incentivize innovators, scientists, entrepreneurs, and a prize in recognition with regards to things to do with water, water conservation, clean water, and so on. And the application will be in digital twin technologies, right? So it's a digital representation of this. Prior to real world deployment. And the advantage of a digital twin is that you can model everything and basically simulate prior to deployment. And digital twin technologies is more accessible rather
Correct.
than undertaking a an infrastructure project. And then you have access to different communities where people apply for this prize. You select a winner, And then that winner could be introduced to different communities where you can work on pilots and
Exactly.
deployment that goes beyond the digital twin, because digital twins typically have a digital component, but they have a physical component. So through your communities, you can scale the digital twin side to the physical component. Did I
Correct.
miss anything in sort of what you're trying to do there?
No, not at all. That's exactly perfectly summarized, Stefan. You even summarize it better than I do because I'm, into this a lot. So I'm very passionate about what we're doing, and sometimes I tend to go in details, but yeah.
So you want to do this with water first, and then next year probably energy and food.
Correct.
Excuse me.
Bless
And
you.
because of the implications of AI and the penetration of AI, that's why you're saying within the nexus of the age of AI. But really, the focus of Earth 5 is this prize, and then
Correct.
taking that the innovation that you're able to surface through the prize. Then into being some kind of deployment where it can be used in different parts of the world. How is that program? So on Earth 5, then how is that going in terms of different partners and so on? Are you getting a lot of people interested in partnering with you on Earth?
Yes. Yes, we're currently talking to multiple partners, and we have an amazing jury panel that members that will be pu published pretty soon in the next 2 weeks. And our partners, pretty much, we're focusing on governmental agencies at the moment because we want to make sure not only to get access to indigenous communities, but also to certain governmental agencies that can help us with advancing the integration of the upcoming solutions. So we don't know for the prize, there is not a single winner. There's actually multiple winners. The winning, let's say, équipe en français, it's like the winning team. The winning team will be mainly, it could be a scientist with a research academic, could be two startups. All of those guys, their innovation combined is the ultimate solution. And that's what the prize is so unique. It's because actually, not only because of the digital twin application, but also we're encouraging innovation to be done collaboratively. Because the only way to accelerate the solution is through a collaborative initiative. And that's what we're hosting that at Earth05. So I just wanted to address that to make sure that the uniqueness is also, and there's a lot out there, of course, they're doing amazing work, and we congratulate everybody. And we just want to be, adding this value from our side with the focus only on water offsetting, which is an upcoming issue that our society will need to deal with. Microplastic solution, micro, because it's still a major issue and not enough solutions in this space and not enough funding. So another thing we add value, it's also our network of conscious investors, everything from venture capital funds to conscious investors basically in the space.
So that's interesting. And in your journey of Earth 5, you're sort of in the first 2 years or first year of this program, or?
We're in the first year. We're definitely in the first year.
So, and then what's the target? Let's say in 3 years' time, what will Earth 5 look like? Can you describe what your target a reality is, or your goal in, let's say, 3 years?
It will be, in fact, within 3 years, we should be able to see a significant change in terms of speed to deployment with the use of advanced technologies and also with the new innovative solutions that hasn't been accessible before. One, not only to tap on the additional water reserves that we have, we're talking about the fresh water again, but also to build prevention mechanism for those water preserves that we have today, reserves, sorry. Because we also want to make sure that we're not extracting water where we should not be doing that. That we need to understand the limit as well, that what could be done and not. So within 3 years, we should be able to extend from 1.2% out of fresh water to 1.5, hopefully. And that will leverage on, at least we believe, within the next 7 years using this methodology. Hopefully, we aren't going to make sure anything possible to make it a success. And we see that already we have hundreds of applications for the Co-Creation Prize, and people are very open to share their patent, to license their patent, to license their technology in order to build together, to accelerate the innovation in the space. So we definitely see that we can tackle on the issue, and we go a little bit against the 40% of people who will be out of fresh water. We want to make sure that 500 million of people will actually have access to fresh water by then, within 7 years. So within 3 years, I would say, hopefully we can touch on millions of lives. We start one life at a time, and that's why our prize is also focused on real, it's called R, sorry, my pronunciation with the R sometime. So I have some R. Yeah, R. Sometime I get that. Yeah, ROI, which is return on lives. And that's what we want to care about, is that our prize next year should be measurable. How many lives has been improved through our collaboration and co-creation platform? So we want to see this methodology being applied over multiple verticals, hopefully, but we do believe that water, food, and energy are the main key area of focus we need to all focus on because of the urgency and because of all the climate change, that for those who believe in it, that it's actually pretty crucial.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is quite fascinating. And it'll do so much good for the world. So let's switch from Earth 5 and your work in where you're going with Earth 5 and your vision for Earth 5. What are some of the trends out there that you want to draw attention to that you think about? So you talked about AI and the fact that it's escalating and people could see that. Are there other trends out there that you think about or you want to bring to the attention of the audience?
I would say it's really good to understand other trend. It's very nice to have to go with the trend and, with always be on trend. But water is not a trend. Hopefully it will be. And water is something we take for granted. So I would say draw attention to that, to the consumption. Everyone knows, everyone, for those of have a lavish lifestyle, maybe they would want to reconsider that. And for many of us who don't understand the value of water, not only, as a hydration system, but it's also water has a spirit, and what this way we take water for granted, and water is beyond of what we see or know. So I would draw more research, more attention to the water space, for sure. I would, sorry to be traditional, but I don't see. Besides AI, and I'm a big fan of the development with AI, but I'm also aware of the dual mission of AI, which is good. And I'm not sure if you're aware of a EU AI Act that has been kind of enforced this year. It's actually the first legal framework that on AI worldwide, and it's happening here in EU. And I think it was a few months ago where this will be as the main rule for any upcoming innovation, anything like from ChatGPT, OpenAI, and so on, of where is that fine line that they cannot cross if that comes to have any harm on humanity. So I would say driving AI with purpose is a trend that I would like to see, and driving limitation on, I'm a big fan, respect to the technology. I'm a big fan of intelligence. But however, we need to understand our limits and our capacity of evolving as species together with the technology. And we need to know when is the right timing for that dual mission of AI to be played. So for now, driving AI with purpose that can help us to tackle on and save on many return on lives, again, the ROL. So that would be something I would like to see more of a trend, I would say, aside from water, which is the AI with purpose and return on lives with the thanks to the advanced technologies today.
So that's, I mean, I can see how that sort of ties in with everything you're doing as well. So you are also in the process of writing a book. Can you talk more about that?
I would love to. I've been struggling years for finishing the book. The book is already written, but I cannot finish the chapter. I cannot finish the last chapter. The book is about my experience. It's more a diary of women in tech and women in finance, and as well as like many of us have sometime visions of and experiences in our mind of the future. And for me, what encouraged me to write the book because a few years ago, I've had some future possibilities, like thoughts, and which in real world it became true a few years later. And it came to the point where I got a little bit scared for my own thoughts. So I'm having a new visions, and I thought I'm gonna bring them in written because if I wrote a book back then, 15 years ago, my book today could have been one of those first who've tapped on advanced technologies, not to mention specifically what it was. And I would like very much to bring in those visions. That's why I call it a science fiction, because some of them might be a bit too much. But I would definitely, the book is, it's rather around that, but it's also, it's about how women as well, and many of the young children who have hope and dreams that nothing is impossible. I've been through a lot myself through my journey, and I've achieved despite the fact there's been so many challenges on the road, on the way. So I think it's more like a journal with future science fiction in it. So it's more for readers who are interested in that they don't have the enough courage as a Middle Eastern woman or as an Arab woman to stand up for her voice and stand up for her own vision and do her own thing. I would say my main audience will be Middle Eastern women, those who need a little push, maybe a little too much of a push, but I'm pretty much and I'm just leaving that inspiration behind me to encourage these young, amazing women out there to believe in themselves and to listen from my experiences, and maybe I can inspire them with the learnings of not to do my mistakes, for example, or at least see the perspective of things. If you do that way, maybe there is that road that can be experienced with a little bit twist of the science fiction in it.
So you've indicated that the book is written. You're just
Yes.
kind of holding on, holding pattern on the last chapter.
Correct.
Maybe you can use one of these large language models to kind of help ideate this last chapter and finish it off.
The truth of the matter is that I do like that, and I really like it. I like the idea. But I leave some time with this kind of things. It's good to do offline because it's that's what I have a feeling that it's very, it's really interesting to use technology in many ways, absolutely. And there's other things that I would still like to keep my creativity offline, a little traditional, so to say. But if I don't have, because it's been there for a while now, so, and to be honest, about maybe 2.5 years now, pending the last chapter. And that's a lot of time. That's a lot of time. But I heard it's pretty normal for many writers.
Yeah, I mean, so it's interesting. So you're anticipating to be released in 2026, right?
Hopefully, yes. Because also there's still the editing, finding the right publisher. So I don't want to be too optimistic and say next year, even if I'm just one chapter away. This chapter might take another year or two or the lifetime. I don't know. Because somehow I don't have the urge to use technology for that. I do feel I need this because I'm also a bit dyslexic. So I need this authenticity come out. This is who I am. And I don't want to. I just want to be me in my own book, even if it's sold or not, but it's something I want to leave for myself. It's more my kind of, that I want it to come from my brain. But if my brain is not able at some point, and at some point I have to use technology to do it, that would be in after 2026. If you don't see the book, it's published, then Maria did not manage to do it through her own capacity.
Well, I think it'd be fascinating because your background is so fascinating.
Thank you, Stefan. Likewise.
We're at the end of the interview, but let me sort of summarize what I heard, right? Inflection points in your life where you grew up in an era of a lot of geopolitical chaos and you had to be sheltered, and you mentioned this this sort of facility with nuns, where you were part of your sheltering that occurred, and that helped shape to who you are. But also, you saw like UNESCO, they'd have these publications, or they'd have these TV pieces or media pieces where you would see children in need. So that's always been a foundational part of who you are. People in need, and especially children in need, and scarcity, and being under many challenges. And that's been sort of this undercurrent of, you study business, and you studied international business, and so on. You got into finance, and you got into working with tech startups and fundraising, international relations. But throughout all of that, your sort of full happiness was if you could get back to these roots of service, right? And so you created this entity called Earth Five, a nonprofit committed to fostering co-creation. And you talk about water scarcity and plastics, microplastics, and how that's a real problem, and energy and food security, and all of this, because the reality is we live in this era of artificial intelligence. So it's sort of intertwined with all of this. But throughout all of your history prior to starting Earth 5, and your work with startups, and your work in finance, you got into things like water waste management, which then ties into water again, clean water, availability of water, the Internet of Things, which ties into why you have this interest in digital twins, and digital twins being a replica of physical reality, but you need sensors and doing that. And so you got involved in smart city projects, which then ties into your Internet of Technologies background, your IoT background, and deployments at over 30 cities. But through all of this, you've been sort of advancing water rights conservation. And so you've taken all of these backgrounds and you coalesce them into this Earth Five, which is about co-creation of water, energy, and food security. And it's about co-creating a prize, but this prize is different. And you have this closing date of June, and it's different because it doesn't necessarily have to be a single entity. It could be a variety of entities co-creating together in open innovation, where they're sharing that innovation and sharing the licensing in that innovation. And you're going to instantiate, and you want them to instantiate this into digital twins. Because then you can have a digital equivalent, and when you model things in the digital universe, you can then scale it, you can apply it to any part of the world, and part of the metaverse, sort of this immersive reality that's increasingly becoming part of our real reality. And you want to see this than in real world deployments because of the relationships you have in indigenous communities, other communities around the world. And even when you look at the future, you're seeing water as part of that future. You can't separate, you won't separate the classical to traditional into the future, because you're saying that it plays a part today and into the past and into the future.
Yes.
And so that's your abiding interest. The water microplastics sort of focus this year, but then energy and food security next year. But in this unique sort of open innovation part, and the digital twin technology part, metaverse part, which is unique in terms of the way you're doing it. And you're working with governments right now because you think governments are great partners in this area. And there's other surprises coming, which you mentioned, which would be pleasant surprises in your journey in doing all of this. And for many years, you've been working on this book, and it's the book, and it's written, and you have a last chapter, and you're holding on that last chapter as you're getting inspired, and you're thinking it may take, you may not do that last chapter for another 2 years, but then of course you have to then publish it and work on partners, and there's all of this sort of copy editing is required, and so on, so that process. So you're taking that into account, but you're saying that maybe you release it like an open book, perhaps. I mean, I was part of a book that was
Good
released
idea.
last year called Doer Dreamers, and we just open sourced it. We just made it available so anybody could access it. And I think it's probably been downloaded a million times or something. It's been downloaded a lot, right? So
Amazing.
maybe that's something that you may consider as well. So did I lose anything in hearing that journey of your life and how you're shaping it?
Absolutely not. You've got it all perfectly summarized that I wish I had your skills to be able to do that. I mean, like in a very amazing. Thank you so much for the summary.
But we're not finished yet. So I wanted to give that as a summary to the audience so they understand what we covered to this point.
Sure.
Now to the audience, they're always curious. So, what are your final recommendations you want to leave with them?
That's a good question. Final recommendation. Look, I feel like recommendations and advices are very, very sensitive, and it's also very personal. Like now, what would I say? I would say, raise your awareness about water and AI for sure. Read about water offsetting, read about water, read about AI, and if you're regulatory, if you're, if you're, depends who the audience are, but if, I mean, and specifically who would that message relate to, and that, but I would say definitely be aware of the dual mission of AI. And if you're a woman or a man in power, or, that's definitely, it's right now is the time, and it's never, it's kind of, it's the only time where we still have a choice in order to make a, to make, to make sure that we leave this world behind with a sustainable format.
So I can
I don't
see,
know if that might.
so I can see then, and this follows your dedication. You're very passionate and dedicated about advancing water rights, conservation, and ethical AI, and
Correct.
using all of your skills and your international network and champion all of this, that is water rights, conservation, ethical AI. And even when there's regulations, you want those regulations to be purposeful to prioritize humanity's needs, but I would say needs of all life. So for the benefit of all, and striving for a world where humans, but I'm going to extend that. I'm going to say all life
All life, for sure. Yes.
and lifeoids. So not just humanoids, but lifeoids exist
I
in
like that.
harmony. So a broader perspective. Maria, thank you for coming in and sharing your insights and all of the wonderful work you're doing and how you're leveraging all of these decades of work with tech startups and fundraising and investor relations. And many times you're an entrepreneur and mentor and advisor, environmentalist and philanthropist, and doing more good. And your future journey is about good. Your book is about good as well, right? Narratives about women in tech and science
Also,
and so on. So I could see your whole life is shaped around purposeful giving, purposeful leadership, innovation, purposeful capital, purposeful business, and sustainability. So, thank you for sharing so much with our audience.
thank you for listening to the brand called You Videocast and Podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.